you're listening to the Sunday Show Tunes podcast. I'm Paul.
And I'm Maureen. Coming up on today's episode, we'll be chatting with West End legend, that is Joanna Riding, and West End and Broadway choreographer Joanne M. Hunter.
Joanne M. Hunter has 20 Broadway shows to her credit as a choreographer, associate choreographer, and performer. She's just been working on not one, but two Andrew Lloyd Webber shows in London simultaneously, the brand new Cinderella and the revival of Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. We are thrilled that Joanne is back with us this afternoon. Hi, honey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you too? I can't believe, I feel like we're old friends. I think is this my third time with
you
guys?
Yep, I think it is.
I think it might be your third time, exactly.
You know, once we make a friend here, we just love having them back.
Yeah, I love that. That's so nice.
Okay, so Joanne, okay, you've been working on Cinderella, which, you know, has been in the press very much lately.
Yes.
It's a brand new retelling of a classic story.
Yes.
Where do you begin with working on a new piece like this?
Oh my God. I mean, well, working on any new piece is hard, right? Because you have a blank piece of paper, it's all new. But working on a brand new piece under these damn virus, this friggin' virus is three gazillion times as hard, I should say. But you know, I love working on new work. Because of the fact, it is what I always say, it's a blank piece of paper, right? There's there's no pretense of it should be, what it was. I mean, yes, there was the Cinderella fairy tale, but if you go back, the Cinderella fairy tale started, and most people think it's an American fairy tale, right? It's because Disney is the one who pretty much made it famous.
Mm. Right.
But it's not. It goes back.
It's not.
Gazillion years ago, where every you know, they had different stories of it. So it's, but we as our modern society only think of the Disney Cinderella. So starting this off, we didn't think of that. I didn't think that, there's bugs flying around, a fairy tale that I have to, you know, that we know at all. It was completely rewritten, new score, new lyrics, new book, completely. And so that is exciting to me. And so that way I can start from scratch with conception of how I see it move, or what is the movement and how does it tell the story, you know, then inspired, of course, by the dialogue, by the lyrics, and of course, by the music. Hmm. So I love working on new stuff. It is so much harder than working on a revival. That's my opinion. The other people might disagree with me, but it's my opinion, because there's no video or something that you've seen before that's in your head. Do you know what I mean? This all has to be brand new coming.
Yeah.
You know, does that mean it has to be born?
It does.
But as a show, it is very original. Unless we've been fortunate enough to see Cinderella. And it's just so original and new. There's literally nothing about it that makes you go, oh, that reminds me of that. Mm-hmm. Or that reminds me of that. Everything about it is new. So it's just a testament to the creative team during this, that they've managed to pull all of that together. It's utterly bonkers. And we were here for it.
We
loved that.
I'm so glad.
And one of the things that we loved about it was the movement was such a combination. You had the contemporary movements of, you know, dance now, but you also had, you know, the waltz, the you know, the huge epic waltz that happens
on a revolving stage.
Yeah. On a revolving stage with a revolving studio, you know, audience and the whole thing. And I loved the combination of the two.
Thank you. When I read the script originally, when Andrew approached me and I read the script, I remember thinking, oh, I love this, because I love that it felt very modern. I had not heard some of the music. I love that. I love that our Cinderella is not a, oh, woe's poor me looking. Mm-hmm. I love that she... in a way, and this is, I say this a lot, in a way she herself is a bit of a bully, you know, and I think a lot of people who are that way, a lot of times they're outsiders, but there's baggage there that makes them, that's their defense mechanism, and that is her defense mechanism. So it's, and so I like, to me that feels more real. That's, you know, when you see people treat other people badly. You hear about bullies in school. You wonder what's going on with that
what's
kid.
What's behind that?
What's yeah. behind that, right? And so that's what I remember going, I liked about this. I liked that about her, that she was strong, but you know, she could be a B-I-T-C-H herself in a way, right? I had to spell it.
I call that a strong woman. I'm sorry.
Exactly. I agree. It is a strong woman. I have to say, some people think, you know, some people in the society say a strong woman is the equal to the bitch word. Don't get me started on that.
You didn't spell it
podcast.
That time, Joanne.
I did.
So listen, okay. There's been a fair few setbacks with this production of Cinderella. Oh my goodness, yeah. Everything has been thrown at you. And then a few days ago, a statement was released saying that Cinderella is not going to open and it's going to have to be closed. The spanner has really been thrown in the works. Where are we with things now?
I'm not speaking for the government there or anything. I believe there are rules that are going to be changed come mid-August or somewhere.
Yeah, 18th of August, I think.
Right. Yep. So I mean, the idea is that we will reopen then because of the track and trace, you know, at Cinderella, the Real Useful Group and Andrew, they set up a whole different system for us to stay safe. You know, they had hired this private organization gentleman, and he was at our rehearsal every day, notating who was rehearsing, what they were doing, put us in categories, you know, from like, I guess I'm going to make this up, but like green, yellow, red. I was always in the red. Because they're like, Joanne, you're always, because I'm up on stage, I'm touching them, you know what I mean? But we were tested every day. Mm-hmm. We had no issues. And, you know, we did not do this track and trace. And like I said, I don't want to be talking out my butt, but we did not use that. We used the system that was in place and it worked brilliantly. Yeah. And yeah. But I think with this track and trace, as soon as someone, you know, gets pinged, then everyone who surrounds them, and that's the whole company, has to go under 10 days of quarantine, right? And I think that it's going to keep happening until these rules change.
And this,
and so,
it's
and
too
you
much
can't
at
cancel.
Stake.
You can, it's too much at stake, and you can't keep canceling the show last minute. It kills the public. You know, people just like here, people come in from everywhere to come see the show. The hype has been so great. The fact just to come back to theater, people, yes. I mean, when I was the first performance, even though I was going to say sexually separated, that, I don't know why I said that. we were socially I don't know where my mind is. It's only 9:15 in the morning here.
Little Freudian slip.
But I don't know where my mind was. But even though we were socially distant, right? Everyone was in masks. And I was at the point where I hate the masks, but I wear them because I want to be safe and I want to be respectful. Everyone in the audience was masked up. We were socially distant, but you would have, it felt like a full house. It just because people wanted to be there. And I forgot that I was wearing my mask at a certain point. You just forget it, except for I freaking now get pimples all over my chin. But that, again, is another podcast. But it was thrilling. It was thrilling, right? Just to be in the same space, to watch live performances. There's nothing like it. There's nothing like it. So, you know, to cancel last minute for these people coming in who've been waiting for so long to come back to the theater, I think they made the decision to say, I mean, they had called me and said, it's going to keep happening until these rules change. And so I think Andrew and the company decided, let's just take this hiatus. So we can come back.
Good wind prevailing.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's
now,
really heartbreaking. My heart is, I was the first part of the week, I was so sad. And, you know, because like I said, I felt like we were ready to open. The company was meshing. The show felt cohesive. It felt like everyone was finding their place on the stage. And it was like, okay, we are now ready. Yeah. And so just, you know what? I mean, listen, there are worse problems in the world, I know, but this is so personal to all of us. In the theater.
Absolutely. And I feel like we've just been slammed left and right. But not only were you working on Cinderella, but you were also working on Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Yes.
And what is it like to juggle two shows at once? That is nuts.
It was, I mean, listen, Well, okay, first of all, any of the COVID weight that I gained, lost it all, baby. Boom. That was
a nice like, bonus.
I was like, score. But it was, you know, it was crazy. I would say in the 3 months I was there, I believe I had about 5 days off. Because what we did was we scheduled Joseph from a Sunday to Friday, or no, Sunday to Tuesday, so that they had Monday off. And then Cinderella was Monday through Saturday, so they had Sunday off. So on our days off, Lawrence and I would go to Joseph. And then when we started teching, Joseph would do mornings and afternoons, and Cinderella would do afternoon, evening. So we were there every morning, teching, just finessing, boom. And then we would run over. There were a couple times I was back and forth to those two theaters, like 3 or 4 times a day. I said, I got to go over to Joseph. I mean, listen, I'm grateful for it. And Joseph was not as hard because it had already been mounted. It's not like I'm creating. I did change a couple things because I always, you know, you're always like, oh, I want to change it, which is great. I had a wonderful associate over there, Talia, who really did her homework and was great in teaching the stuff. And then we would come in and just in finesse. And Nikki Wollaston, who was the resident, who's the director, she was Lawrence's associate. She put it together. We had a team that was absolutely brilliant. You know, so we were very fortunate. But like I said, it had already been done. It's a remount. So it's nowhere near as difficult as mounting a new show. So that was very fortunate. And actually there we did have because of kids, you know, there are kids in the show. We did have to shut rehearsal down for 10 days because it spread. So I think we had about 10 people. And once you have that many, you have to shut down, which actually was in a way a blessing. Cause that was one of my days.
Did you cause that shutdown? Was that your fault?
I gave you some time.
But in a way it was a blessing because when we started tech, we were already in previews. So in a way, Cinderella, knowing we would never ever start before 1 or 2 o'clock in the afternoon, especially with a warm up. So we would always have a good first part of the day to get over there to tech, do run throughs and everything. So in a way, that 10 day hiatus of rehearsal actually helped our schedule out a little bit more. I felt like it gave us more time to give them time, you know, and give them good time. So that was, in a way, that was a good thing. And like I said, I got a day off in there.
I can't believe it. Maureen and I have a mutual friend actually who auditioned for you for Joseph. And when I said that we were going to be chatting with you, they were like, wow, she works people hard. So I can only begin to imagine how exhausted you were. I'm not going to name names. So can you imagine that energy twice, Maureen? That's insane.
I love it.
We really hope that Cinderella opens and we can go to the ball before, that was really corny, sorry, before too long. And we also need to get back to see Joseph because a friend of the show, Lindsay Hateley,
Definitely, we
love Lindsay here.
That's a lot of fabulous.
And usually we ask what's going to happen next, what you're doing next. But I think what you should be doing next is having a little lie down and rest.
I do have like a couple of weeks, but then I start a script workshop here in the beginning of August.
Oh my goodness. I'm exhausted just thinking about it, Joanne. M. Hunter, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It is my pleasure. Thank you so. I thank you, old friends. Thank you. And thank you for being such advocates and supportive humans to live theater and theater and the theater in general. So I think it's brilliant. And on behalf of a great deal of my friends and colleagues and peers, we thank you for that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Thank you. Bye.
Cinderella is at the Gillian Lynn Theater, and Joseph and the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat is at the London Palladium. For tickets and more information, head over to the theater's websites.
Multi-award-winning actor Joanna Riding is a national treasure. She has starred in The West End in Billy Elliot, The Witches of Eastwick, My Fair Lady, and The Girls, to name just a few shows. Most recently, she has played Sally in the acclaimed National Theatre revival of Stephen Sondheim's Follies. She is just about to play Nettie Fowler in the Regent's Park open air theatre production of Carousel in London. We are beyond thrilled that Joanna Riding has joined us this afternoon. Jo, hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
It's so lovely to have you on Sunday Show Tunes. Now, you won an Olivier Award for your portrayal of Julie Jordan back in Nicholas Heitner's acclaimed 1992 production of Carousel. What's it like returning back to that show almost 30 years later?
Well, it doesn't feel like 30 years. It's shocking to even hear 30 years.
You don't look any older.
Yeah, it was a very, very special time for me back then at the National, and it started a series of shows for me there. It was a real learning ground for me, and for so many reasons that show has stayed with me. And so coming back to it was always going to be weird. But from the outset, Tim Sheeder spoke to me of his new vision for the show. And how they were going to rethink it and replace it in time and geography. And it sounded so exciting that I couldn't say no. It's not something I think ordinarily I would think of doing, revisiting a show even with a different role. Uh-huh. But it was really thrilling to hear of his plans for it. And I thought, well, you know, this is going to be as big a landmark Carousel as the National production was then.
Yeah.
Oh, how exciting. That actually leads beautifully into my next question. With it being a new production of it, what can the audiences expect?
Well, I think it's no longer a secret that it's not going to be set in America. Mm-hmm. Which is, I think, the first production I know of that hasn't set Carousel in America. It's going to be a very British and a very working class setting. And we're sort of not pinpointing any particular decade, but it's sort of roughly going to be post-war Britain. So there's little clever touches of different decades that prevents you from going, this is where it is, or this is where it is. Yeah. And it's been really exciting.
Are they still going to be able to do clam bake?
Well, I know I was looking at this and thinking, you know, clams, and looking up what clams really are. And they're sort of like, it's a broad name for any sort of shelled fish like that. And I thought, and a few people in the company said, no, we used to call them clams when we were growing up. And I think it depends where you're from in England.
But I think that's probably true.
Know what a clam is. So yeah, it's still very much a clam bake. It's not going to be a balm bake or something like that.
I just love the fact that they're taking a Rodgers and Hammerstein, and you just think of baskets and gingham and jolliness and setting it there. Carousel, I think, is probably one of the most problematical of the Rodgers and Hammersteins. Have things been done to address some of those difficult themes?
When you say problematic, are you referring to some of the darker issues within
it? Yeah, I mean, Julie just is like, well, it's okay. He loves me when he's violent towards her. How is that dealt with?
We are dealing with the male violence head on.
Yeah.
And very courageously, I think, the way it's been done. And obviously, Julie loves this man, and she, as many people do in violent relationships, finds a way, at least initially, to justify it to herself, or justify to herself why she stays with him.
Yeah.
But Tim is not content with forgiving him. There is actually no redemption for Billy in this production, which is groundbreaking, I think.
Yeah.
There isn't the forgiveness within the piece. Regardless of what Julie decides for herself, the piece itself is commenting in a very strong way on that. Equally, the suicide, which here again is... it's dealt with full on. We're given the full graphic of that. There's no doubt in anyone's mind that he chooses to kill himself in a very desperate and horrendous way. You probably know that the park are highlighting the work of Refuge.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because of the themes within the piece. And they really are dealing with them. And I think very much like Carousel at the National those years ago did, they didn't shy away from those themes, but here they're taken and addressed to a new degree, which I think is, you know, these issues sadly still remain very relevant and horrifically during the pandemic, probably, you know, it's
gotten worse.
Violence, domestic violence is the hidden dark pandemic, isn't it? Mm. So it's very pertinent and very relevant. It feels really timely.
A lot of Rodgers and Hammerstein really do, don't they? But this is, we saw the Broadway revival a few years ago, and it just didn't quite feel that it held up as well. So it's so exciting what you're saying about this
the
revival.
Changes and how you're addressing the issues. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love the Britishness of it. We all wondered what we were going to do. Were we all going to settle on one accent? And we did the read through where everyone just had their own accent. And it really worked. It was fabulous. I think if you think of a British seaside town, it can sometimes be a very transient community, people coming and going.
Right.
All walks of life. And it really seems to work, for me at least. So I think people needn't worry about losing that Americanism. I think we've very much made it our own.
Brilliant.
It's working.
Oh, see, I love that.
I literally want to come and see it this afternoon now. You have made me so excited about it. But you were almost not destined to be an actor. Thank goodness you were an actor in the end. But in an alternate world, what would Joe Riding have been?
Joe Riding would not have got his theatres confused and would have ended up in the NHS.
Amazing.
That's for sure. I was biology was actually my favourite subject. And I remember telling the vicar when I was 6, I was going to be a brain surgeon. Never clever enough for that. But I think that would have been where I would have headed. Even now, I love reading about science and biology and the human body. So yeah, definitely got my theatres mixed up.
What changed your mind? What was the thing that led you to theatre?
It was people talking to me about drama, which I'd as a little girl who'd suffered as a baby, actually a lung virus, which affected, weakened my lungs. And the best thing I could have done, though nobody was telling us that, the best thing I could have done was sing. And I just started to sing. It was the most bizarre thing. And I would sing and sing and sing. And that started singing lessons, and that started the local music festivals. But I was never the most beautiful singer. I was never the most technical singer, but I did love to tell a tale. And people used to sidle up to my mum and say, "Who's a drama teacher?" We didn't even know what a drama teacher was in those days. But it sowed a seed. It sowed a seed, and gradually those biology books went under the bed. And I ended up going to do a drama foundation course. And I mean, you know, talking of under the bed, I think 3 years of drama school, I hid under the bed. I mean, I really didn't know what I was doing. And I gave myself sort of 5 years after that to get a decent role. But I had so much good fortune early on. Carousel really being one of those. That was the production, I think, that really got things going for me and put me on the map. And even then, I don't think I appreciated what I had at the time, because I was so green behind the ears. You know, I was really, what's the wet behind the ears? That's the expression? Green behind the gag? I don't know. What's the expression? Green, wet, whatever. Take what you will. I've had a lucky run. I really have.
So it seems to me that everything leads back to Carousel, because you met Janie D in Carousel and just recently starred with her in the National Revival of Follies, the National Theatre again. Everything is like they say, everything's
coming back.
Linked to Kevin Bacon at some point, but I think pretty much everything is linked to you through the National and stuff. Tell us about your friendship with Janie D.
Very special. She took me under her wing during that carousel at the National. I was a startled rabbit. And I think Nicholas Heitner, who did wonders for me in so many ways as a director, but I think he found me immensely irritating. And I probably was immensely irritating. And Janie, far more experienced, she just took me under her wing, was the greatest and kindest of supports, and continued to be. And I just looked up to her forever. And then the chance to go and do Follies with her, was just glorious. And of course, we got to revive our roles in Carousel at the Cadogan Hall just shortly after we finished our Follies run, which was very moving, very moving. And strangely enough, in the audience that night was Carly Borden, who is now, of course, playing Julie. And Carly and I, of course, have worked together a number of times, and she is wonderful casting. If I'd been half the actress she is doing Julia, I could only have wished.
So if there was anything that like a role that you would like to play, a bucket list, you know, character or role that you would like to play, what would that be?
Well, this goes back to Janie again. We recently did a Holland Park concert version of A Little Night Music.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I did A Little Night Music last summer.
Yes, and I did A Little Night Music at the National a few years after doing Carousel. And of course, normally, as I said before, I wouldn't revisit a show, but I got a taste of playing the Countess when I did that that show with Janie. And I'd love the Countess. So I'm longing to do a proper full-on West End production of A Little Night Music with Janie D as Desiree, me as Countess. You heard it here first. Let's make it happen.
Let's hope that happens. Well,
let's hope that we've put it out into the ether now. So that has to happen.
We are unbelievably and sadly out of time. Jo Ryding, thank you so much for chatting with us this afternoon.
It has been a dream.
It's been a joy. Thank you so much.
Carousel is at the London Regent's Park Theatre from the 1st of August to the 25th of September. For tickets and more information, head over to the theatre website.
Well, that's it for this episode. We'll be back in September.
If you've enjoyed listening, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite listening platform.
I'm Paul.
And I'm Maureen.
And you've been listening to the Sunday Show Tunes podcast.
Thanks for joining us.
Bye.
Bye.